This is The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to The Guardian Football Weekly. Great games at the top. Liverpool, Chelsea, Arsenal and Manchester City serve up brilliant football. Alexander-Arnold's pass, Mo Salah's finish, Kovacic's volley, Martinelli's skill, Saka's touch, City's relentlessness. So let's see how much we can talk about Stuart Atwell. What's worse, broadcasters talking about VAR and decisions, or talking about broadcasters talking about VAR and decisions after the game? Elsewhere, crisis klaxon at Everton, question mark. Will the boos ring around Goodison and once again be the most uttered words this season? Below them, a vital win for Leeds over Burnley. Is it pick three from four for relegation? West Ham and Spurs win in the race for fourth place. What a goal from Manuel Lanzini. And we'll have an update on the condition of Trezeguet after that terrible looking incident yesterday at Brentford. And that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barney Ronay, welcome.
Hello.
John Bruin, how are you?
I'm okay, Max. Hello.
And hello, Barry Glendenning. Lots of messages for you over the last couple of weeks. Mag says, no questions, just happy Baz is back. Ed, great that Barry is back. We missed you. I suspect, Barry, this is the most kindness that you've had bestowed upon you in your entire life.
Yeah, I'm not used to it, Max. For anyone who doesn't know, my dad died last week. It's been tough. I'm already going here and I didn't want to, but yeah, thank you everyone for being so nice. It was very kind.
And I would
like to formally apologize to you for FaceTiming you at some ungodly hour of the morning with my older sister when the two of us were absolutely smashed. Apologies to you and the current Mrs. Rushton.
I will say that is the most drunk I've ever seen you, and that is quite a statement. But I mean, I don't know. I suspect you don't want to dwell on it, but you are okay. You're doing okay.
I'm fine, thank you. I will be okay. My family are all well. My dad had a good knock and he went quick, and I'd take that if you offered it to me now, but I almost certainly won't have a good knock, but the way things are going, but we'll see.
We'll see, yes. And when you do go, we will commemorate you, I suspect, with at least one part of a three-part podcast. let's start at Stamford Bridge. Ryan says, odds of 25-1 on you describing Chelsea versus Liverpool as fun, Max. Barney, you were there. What a first half. It was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was amazing. Amazing game. You know, 2.5 weeks ago, there was the 2-2 draw at Spurs, which was quite similar. There were two kind of quite fiery, flawed, brilliant teams sort of going at it in the middle of all this kind of confusion and weirdness in the world outside. And it was one of those occasions where football just provides this perfect little lighted space where you forget everything else and everyone playing forgets everything else. And there's this brilliant moment of kind of escapism and beauty, and it's just self-contained drama. And it was really something. And I kind of thought I wouldn't want this to happen. But if you were to just very briefly pretend that Manchester City didn't exist, that would have been the perfect setup for the most incredible title race between two classically flawed and good, bad English teams. Because, you know, City just on another level, they play football that is the opposite of that, which kind of eradicates error, which is still beautiful to watch. I'm not criticising them. They're a fantastic thing, but you don't get games like that. I suppose they had a 6-3 the other day, which is most unusual. But it was different. It felt like a different game. This felt like English football from the 90s when they were going to play a Champions League game and lose 1-0 because you can't defend properly. But there were some moments in it that were just absolutely jaw-dropping and beautiful to watch.
What was your pick of the moments, John, if you had to pick one?
I won't go down the refereeing route and talk about Mane after 6 seconds. But all right, let's start with that.
Okay.
It was a sending off, but let's move on because there were another 90 minutes of football to be played that were fascinating. The Kovacic goal, an absolute beauty. And there's quite a few people trying to say which goal it reminded them of, and you know, you've got your Paul Scholes and your you name any volleys. The one it reminded me of was, remember Steve McManaman in the Champions League final?
Okay.
Where it sort of, like, it was a player that wasn't really used to doing that type of thing, improvising at the moment, because we know that Kovacic, essentially, when he normally shoots, it's almost like he's passing the ball with his instep, and this time he just launched it. It was an absolute beauty.
Jordan says, could Barry score that Kovacic goal? Alan says, anyone else think, as Kovacic was readying himself to volley that ball for Chelsea's first, quote, Glendenning heads this? I'm sad for you, Alan, that it's permeated, that header has permeated your soul to that level. I think what was so brilliant, Barry, about that volley is the fact that he's never set. It's not like the Scholes volley where, you know, your body is in a perfect shape. He's basically falling over.
Yeah, it was brilliant feat of balance, poise, dexterity, and the fact that it's Mateo Kovacic as opposed to Mason Mount or, you know, somebody else makes it all the more impressive. I'm finding it difficult to concentrate, I have to say, Max, because John Bruin, who increasingly looks like a Motorhead bass technician, is wearing a T-shirt, and I'm trying to figure, is it Mark E. Smith on the T-shirt?
That is correct, yeah. I'm going for the ultimate roadie look. That's my look for 20. It is 2022 for a minute, and then I thought it was 2023. There you go.
Have you got a big bunch of keys on your belt and a roll of gaffer tape?
If I said yes, would that?
What was the question?
That's what I want to hear.
What was the question anyway? I don't know what we were talking about.
We were talking about Mateo Kovacic's wonder strike.
Barney is head in his hands. Oh, no, that's losing just, the will to live.
That's just normal. I thought about the Kovacic goal. It was sort of like everyone has scored a goal like that. Like I'm pretty sure I've scored a goal like that on the basketball court behind my mum's house in Greenwich. Like it's one of those freakish kind of hits that you'll do once in training that sort of works. But the point is, he did it in this incredibly high-pressure Premier League game with people running at him and millions watching. And also, I would say Kovacic is not a technically poor player in any way. Like I would expect, he's an absolutely brilliant footballer. He just plays in that kind of deep role. But his use of the ball and his passing and technical, his touch are incredible. So perhaps he's just showing off, you know, what all footballers, you know, they're pretty good, aren't they, footballers? They're pretty good when you see them kind of decent, you know.
Especially these ones, aren't they? Right at the top. On that 6-second red card, Tuchel agreed with you, John, that it was a red card. Jordan Henderson, interestingly, said, I was disappointed that he got a yellow. So, you know, so maybe. you don't know. I mean, Jordan asked the question, how early is too early for a red card? Is there a certain mark told to all refs, maybe the 8-minute mark, or does it change based on the ref? I mean, I think it is true that 6 seconds is part of the reason why he got away with it.
I think it's entirely the reason. It's interesting, actually, because if he had been shown the red, which he deserved, there would have been absolute uproar. And we'd have had hand-wringing and pearl-clutching from pundits and presenters and whatnot. But it was a red card.
Is there a thing to be said for the ludicrous idea that things mean different things at different points in the game? I mean, the fact is, after 4 or 6 seconds or whatever it was, your body hasn't really started moving. Your adrenaline hasn't really started going. You haven't touched the ball. You're not totally, you're really fired up. You really want to do something, but you're not really in control of what you're doing. There's no narrative. They're human beings. If you do that in the 70th minute after you've just been jostling with that guy for the last half hour, you very clearly know what you're doing. To do something like that after 6 seconds is different when you've just been stood for the last 2 minutes still. You're incredibly angry. There is an idea of, they're not just robots where action A happens, therefore action B must happen. The idea of, oh, letting the game flow, people just laugh about that, an early reducer. But there's some tiny modicum of common sense in that, yes, it is an entertainment product as well, and somebody not being quite ready, not being quite in the game, will totally distort the game for the remaining 89.56 seconds. Like, I know on television it just looks like a bunch of robots are playing, but in reality, these are some people who are trying to get their bodies to do things and get their brain in the right place, and quite possibly common sense might exist.
I don't disagree, Bernie, but then you have to go back to Max's original question, I suppose. At what point is it acceptable to show the red?
I think in the old firm games, is it not like the first 5 minutes, you all bets are off, you're allowed to do whatever you like? Maybe we could introduce that rule. I found most amusing about this thing, Jamie Carragher's post-match punditry, and this nebulous idea of the orange card. You know, where it's like, oh, well, yeah, it wasn't a yellow, it wasn't a red, it was an orange card that doesn't exist. So, you know, you can say anything's an orange card because it wouldn't matter. It wouldn't matter.
I mean, I'm very pro sin bin, but I want to change laws of the game that no one else wants. I mean, it would be hard for Mane to have argued that Aspilicueta had been at him all game by the time he did that.
Can I clarify, though? It was a red card. Like, he should have been sent off.
Yes.
Just saying, yeah. I would understand the idea that the guy's just not got moving. He's, okay, let's just carry on. You know, that's clearly what the referee thought.
And Barney, did you notice anything different about the fact that fans were allowed to stand at the game first time since 94, 12,000 fans in safe standing?
I know that was happening, but it kind of just looked the same, to be honest. I mean, Chelsea, people tend to stand up anyway there. It's one of those sort of tight grounds where everybody stands up and, you know, calls everybody else a wanker all the time anyway. So it's actually got a very good atmosphere, Chelsea. I kind of like going there. No, I didn't notice any different. The Liverpool fans were very loud. It was a really good away section, as they sort of often are. And Chelsea, Matthew Hardingham was very loud as usual. I didn't notice anything different. There was a good moment when Trent Alexander went to take a corner and everyone started, the whole stand there was chanting, "You're just a shit, Reece James." And you could see him slightly, just very slightly finding it funny, just very slightly, because he was waiting for the ball. And it was, I mean, actually not true as well. He's not a shit Reece James. He's always very distinctly himself. He's either a shit Alexander Arnold or a good Alexander Arnold. I'd say on that occasion they were probably wrong. But yeah, I thought it was a good atmosphere.
His pass to Salah was brilliant, wasn't it? And actually Salah's chip that Mendy saved is another brilliant moment. John says, is Antonio Rudiger undoing the goalkeeper's gloves before a corner, the new gold standard for shithouser? I must admit, I didn't see that moment. I suspect if he'd managed to take them off surreptitiously without the keeper noticing, and so the keeper was suddenly like Bob Wilson in the 60s with no gloves on, that would be quite the move. Alan says, at half-time of the Chelsea-Liverpool game on French TV, Emmanuel Petit was piping cream onto a cheesecake. Have Keane and Carragher been doing punditry wrong all these years? He looks, I mean, he's a nice chap, Manu Petit, in my limited experience. He looks very happy, and there's a Magi Mix. Maybe half time is sponsored by Magi Mix or Mix de Magie. Richie says, as Thomas Tuchel waved his arm to urge his team forward for one last Route 1 punt at the end of the 2-2 draw, I was horrified to notice he'd sweated all the way through his grey Chelsea puffer coat. And not just a spot of dampness, a veritable sea of perspiration. I wonder if anyone on the panel noticed this extraordinary feat of moisture, and if you might spare a moment to discuss who would take the prize as the sweatiest ever Premier League manager. I don't know if anyone...
I'm clearly watching football all wrong, because I didn't notice Rudiger trying to remove Quirin Kelleher's gloves. And I didn't notice Thomas Tuchel's sweat patches. I think the greatest feat of perspiration I've ever seen is Lee Evans habitually sweating through his suits while performing stand-up comedy and needing a beach towel on stage with him to mop his brow.
Yeah, I was going to say Luther Vandross used to sweat an awful lot. Alexander O'Neill, you know. Because they used to wear those big suits, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Thomas Tuchel has to wear, you know, one of those sort of fairly thin tracksuits, because if he wore a suit like, say, Brendan, he would sweat so much. Maybe he's just, you know, some people just perspire a lot, don't they? Maybe that's why he's so thin.
Well, he never stops moving as well. Though it was incredible watching him from behind the bench. He was so animated. He does this thing of banging his chest constantly. He bangs his chest and whirls his arms. And at one point, when they started doing a VAR check on Kovacic's goal, he went insane and did a kind of bogling dance in front of the Liverpool bench, like a kind of primitive kind of sexual challenge. And then he picked up an orange drink, full of energy drink, an orange bottle, and threw it really hard into one of the advertising boards. But he kind of slightly ruined it then by turning round and just checking it was okay and sort of looking slightly guilty and then walking back. But for a moment there, he was a wild man.
If that goal had been disallowed, I would have just given up on football altogether. And I had no skin in the game. I didn't care who won. But if that Kovacic goal had been ruled out for some spurious offside, I would have been so angry.
Just on the sweating thing, I remember during a Soccer AM, Richard Dunwoody sweating so profusely during an interview that it was sort of the sweat was pouring down his armpits and sort of mid-interview, and you could sort of see it. And like in our ear, the director was like, I'm going to have to frame him so tightly so no one can see this the rivulet, just like, it's like, it was like two rivers just pouring out of his armpits. I mean, quite often if I wore a grey top or something, you'd hairdryer your pits during an ad break sometimes. But Dunwoody took the biscuit.
Well, that's probably, Max, a lifetime spent wasting in hot baths and running with polythene bags over your skin to sweat and shed weight.
Possibly. Any thoughts on Lukaku not being in the squad at all, John?
What a curious interlude that's been. He gave an interview 3 weeks ago. And as far as I can gather with the interview, he pretty much said, you know, that I really liked it at Inter Milan. And, you know, maybe it hasn't quite worked out at Chelsea because of formation changes. You know, this wasn't quite Roy Keane plays the pundit in which he blasts everyone in his team in front of them. It was just... It's just one of those things. I think the thing is, though, obviously Thomas Tuchel has taken control of this situation, dropped him, said there was too much noise about it. I think what this is Tuchel trying to take control of the situation. Now, you know, we can remember that Didier Drogba on at least two occasions wanted to leave the club. You also had Diego Costa. I remember there was a fairly famous time when I think he wanted to move to China in a January transfer window, and Antonio Conte had to come out and play the hard man and show and discipline him. I think this is just part of being a Chelsea manager, is that the players have a great deal of constituency because managers are so expendable at the club. And I think Tuchel feels this is the way to take control of the situation. Now, personally speaking, I wouldn't be surprised if old Tactics Tom was gone this summer, because Chelsea don't meet their goals, their expectations. That's not to say he's a bad manager. They've sacked quite a few very good managers. But Lukaku wants to go back to Serie A. Now, what does that say? This is the word. What does that say? That says, OK, he was happy in Serie A. That makes sense. But does he want to go there because it's easier for him? And does he look at, a friend of mine said this to me, does he look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic knocking in goals in his mid-40s, thinking, that's the life for me? It's a situation that should, at other clubs, end with Lukaku being sold or loaned or whatever, but at Chelsea, it's often the manager that pays the price.
All right, that'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin at the Emirates. Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. Arsenal 1, Manchester City 2. Arsenal were brilliant in this game, weren't they? Martinelli, Saka, they played with verve and style, took the game to City. So, Barney, what did you think of Stuart Atwell's performance?
Yeah, it's unfortunately one of those. I mean, I watched this one on television and it was really odd. The BT Sport coverage was like... a funeral. It was like this, they were just very, very sad. And they were so sad that they had to talk about the referee and VAR. And there was this saddened, baffled look. And I said, well, it doesn't have to be there. And Arsenal were really good in the first half. And the goal was brilliant. The goal was like a perfect Arsenal goal. You know, it came from Ben White's interception. Odegaard drops deep. It was like the Arsenal goal you would... design using some kind of offcuts from the team. and Saka, really good finish. And they were really good for that early period. But I thought Man City coming back and winning the game was just one of those things that teams that always win tend to do. If you've won 10 in a row, it's so much more likely that you're going to win a game like that, because something in you just says, yeah, we're going to win this, we'll do this. There'll be a weird little fumbled goal at the end. And it did remind me of Man United in the 90s, where people probably say referees were massively biased in their favour then as well. But it's just one of those old things about football that sometimes the fates go one way. But just on VAR, if I could just get my little...
Of course, you've been itching for
this. Got to stop talking about it. It's not a scandal. It's just the way it is. It's a game of collisions and feet in the wrong place and things that happen in tiny little moments. You know, all we want is consistency. So people always say that, but there is no consistency. It's not maths. It's people colliding. The reason football has rules is to manage those collisions. Collisions aren't allowed, they kind of are allowed. So all of the rules are about managing the state of collisions and trying to find some objective truth in it. And then when you can't, suggesting that the faltering human beings unable to do that are cheats and biased and bribed. It's just ridiculous. They're just a bunch of blokes who possibly some of them aren't perfectly good at their jobs. They're not trying to cheat you. It's just the way life is, and there is no objective truth, and it's just a game of collisions that's quite fun. And by putting it under the microscope, we've just made that whole painful process so much more endlessly forensic, so that you have to have Jake Humphrey sitting there as though he's talking about the Kennedy assassination. I mean, it's just, that's the worst thing about it. Just stop, and then it's stopped, and it doesn't happen anymore.
Well, finally, Cheshire B says, I support, brackets, insert any Premier League club here. Why is there a refereeing agenda against us? And actually, Barry and I were on the radio yesterday going, there is no agenda. Like, you know, Arsenal fans going mad, going, Stuart Atwell has ref 17 Arsenal games and Arsenal only ever won 6 of them. And you're like, that sort of sounds like Arsenal's form generally, doesn't it? But then we got texts from everyone going, did you not know about Roger East's conspiracy against Brighton or Trevor Kettle's hex against Walsall? Like, I think it's okay to talk about big decisions in games, the Mane moment, that Edison Odegaard penalty. It's okay to mention them. They're incidents that happen in the game. But like this obsession with agendas from anyone, Barry, Barry, thought Stuart Atwell got everything right.
I don't think he did a great deal wrong, if anything wrong. And the mournful BT Sport coverage that Bernie speaks of, it, I mean, it started sort of halfway through the second half and continued on in blanket saturation coverage in the post-match analysis. I mean, there's two big talking points. If those decisions had gone the other way, we'd still be saying he'd got them wrong. So I thought he did quite well. And I was a bit shocked, but this outrage and anger and seething mouth foaming from Arsenal fans, I mean, it'll pass. Something else will happen in the Man U Wolves game tonight and we'll all forget about Arsenal Man City very quickly. But you know, it's funny. I think it's funny. There's clearly no conspiracy. And if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be quite happy my team played well, but be rueing the familiar failings that, you know, saw them shoot themselves in the foot. As I say, something will happen this evening, Man U Wolves, and we'll all forget about it and move on. But I thought the coverage was scandalous, and that sets the agenda and fuels the conspiracy theories of idiots. And I think they're the problem rather than Stuart Atwell.
John?
I'm not sure if you'll even be able to put this on the podcast, but I did see that, you know, Twitter obviously goes into the weirdest possible directions. But one character...
Matt Scott?
Not Matt Scott.
Matt Scott said it was a hex, the Stuart Atwell and the Arsenal hex. So who are you bringing?
Well, I won't mention his name, mostly because I can't remember it because it's something, you know, random. But, you know, it's probably got a few numbers on the end of it. But his idea was, so he had delved onto the company's house website.
Yes, I saw this.
And had found the address And he advocated that fellow Arsenal fans should club together and send some spies into the PGMOL office to see which referees are biased against Arsenal. I think, you know, in the world of football conspiracy, that's about as far as I've seen it go so far. And I'm just worried in what direction it goes after that, really, because I agree with Barry. I thought it was okay refereeing. Okay, the Edison one, marginal, whatever. You can see why it wasn't given. Gabriel was a wally and should have been sent off. And Xhaka, well, you can't foul them twice and not get away with a penalty. So that's the end of it. And Arsenal did what Arsenal have often done, but what they preluded it by playing very well in the game and look exciting. Just enjoy that. Just please. It's better.
It's important to remember also that the idea is always that referees are biased in favour of bigger, stronger clubs. The way modern football works, the more powerful teams tend to have the ball a lot more and tend to have skillful players and tend to spend a lot of time attacking your defenders, running at them, kind of falling over. And if you do that 10 times in a game, as opposed to 3 times in a game, it's more likely one of those is going to end up in a contentious penalty in your favour. Also, if you stop employing Granit Xhaka in your midfield, it's quite likely there'll be a lot fewer of those contentious, borderline, clumsy tackle, was it a penalty moments. I mean, it's often just a tactical thing, and more powerful teams get more penalties because they're better and because they play the game a certain way. And that's probably more likely than some sort of weird Illuminati conspiracy.
Arsenal were, and I agree with you, Barry, if I was an Arsenal fan, I'd be so buoyed by that. I know they didn't win this game and they'd been on a really good run where they'd beaten a lot of teams they probably should beat, as well as a good win over West Ham. But there are so many reasons to be positive about the way they took that game to Manchester City. And especially, I know Thomas Partey had a good game, didn't he? And lots of them played well. But Martinelli is absolutely sensational.
Yeah, they were very aggressive in the press. I mean, 3 games into this season, Arsenal were a laughing stock. And Mikel Arteta was talking about, you know, sticking with his process. And we were joking on this podcast and other people were joking on their podcast. What is the process? We don't know what the process is. And I'd be hugely optimistic if I was an Arsenal fan. I don't think they're good enough to finish fourth, but I think they could well be next season. They've got good young players, who some of whom ended up in the team by mistake or default because no one else was available. I mean, Emil Smith Rowe impresses me hugely. So yeah, it was a good performance, but ultimately they Arsenal themselves out of the points that would have made for a better title race, you know. So
Man City are 11 points clear at the top, or they were 11. They're now 10 points clear. Only a few weeks ago, we did think this was going to be the most exciting title race in years. That's sort of annoying, isn't it?
Max, it's quite funny because I got my bad news a week ago and went home, and I'm pretty sure there was a 3-way title race then. <Yeah. laughs> And then there was this blur of games and results, and obviously I wasn't really paying attention. I was keeping an eye on the results and trying to catch the highlights here and there. And I come back after what seems like only a few days and City have suddenly surged 10 points clear, and I'm not sure when that happened.
Yes, it's a very good point. It's happened quite quickly, Barry. And what you've missed is Chelsea and Liverpool dropping some points and Manchester City winning every football match, basically. And look, if they don't lose games like that where they don't play brilliantly, and Arsenal, you know, were a big part of City playing not so well, then there is no hope for anyone else. So let's go to Goodison Park. Everton 2, Brighton 3. John, very loud boos at Goodison at full time, not for the first time. First time Brighton have scored 3 all season, and they played well, didn't they? But it looks bleak for Everton.
I was forwarded a WhatsApp yesterday afternoon, in which I don't know who this is from, actually, but it was a friend of a friend, and it said that they had deliberately tuned into an illegal stream at the end of that game just so they could hear the boos at the end. And it was a... it was a very special boo. I mean, I think I've said this several times on the pod over the years, but just nobody groans and boos like they do at Goodison. They really have it down to the finest of arts. I'm beginning to think that Rafa Benitez wasn't the right man for Everton. and perhaps never was.
Who is, though, John?
Well, I know the answer. It's all building up to Wayne Rooney. It's perfect. It's absolutely perfect.
Yeah, so yeah, you're absolutely right, Barney. Yeah, yeah. But actually, if you look at it, it's like, okay, it's not a very good squad. You give him no money, and you appoint a manager who is beloved at your rivals, and has openly criticised your club and named it as a small club. And labelled it a small club, and which really angered the fans of that club. And you don't give him the means by which to make the team better, and he's also probably not the same manager he was 10, 15 years ago. What could possibly go wrong with that equation?
Well, I mean, Jermaine Genus on Match of the Day like pulled apart how disorganised their midfield was and, you know, the gaps between them. And that Barry, is not very Rafa-like, is it?
No, and he also made the point that they had, is it their last three games postponed? So they've had plenty of time to work on shape and not having gaps. And it is incredibly un-Rafa-like. But Everton just increasingly seem a basket case of a club. And, you know, no matter who you put in, I thought Rafa would be a terrific appointment. And I'm interested now that I want Wayne Rooney to get the job now that Barney has mooted or run that up the flagpole. It seems like absolute common sense. I hadn't thought of that before.
No, it's perfect because it's the exact extreme of what you've got, an experienced, unpopular guy. Let's bring in an inexperienced, popular guy. That's how football works, and it always succeeds. But also, Rooney just looks like he's got this kind of light around him now. I don't know if you've watched many Derby games, but he's finally really sorted out his look at last. His look has never really been right for quite a long time, but he's now, he's got a bit more weight on him. He's got this majestic, his beard is majestic. He's got this kind of nobility as he strides out. He looks like he's on a mission, and he's actually doing great things at Derby. He's kind of supporting the club. They're winning games. They love him. And Rooney's oddly becoming more of a kind of cultish hero, I think, now than he was when he was a player. The last England game I came back from, the whole tube was chanting Wayne Rooney's name, which was unexpected because England, actual match-going England fans and United fans always liked him. But he kind of got some very bad press by the end of his career. He seemed unpopular. But I think his managerial career is going to be really intriguing. It might be really good. I'm really into him.
Do we think he understands the DNA of the club enough at Everton? Do you think that could be a slight issue, couldn't it? Brighton were really good, actually. Alexis McAllister's, both his goals were brilliant. And both his goals were brilliantly set up as well. That cushioned header from Mopai is not easy at all because that ball's coming so fast.
There was a triple knee slide in the wake of that goal. McAllister, Mwepu and Mopai. And if I was a manager, that would just wreck my head because all I'm thinking are knee ligaments.
I completely agree with you. They did goal of the month, didn't they, last night? There were so many brilliant goals in December, but so many knee slides. Conor Gallagher went with such power. I thought the bottom half of his legs might just split off because he was flying along so quickly. Yes, John?
Did you notice on goal of the month that all the goals of the month were scored by December the 16th?
I didn't. That is early. Maybe people saw they were so good that there was no point scoring a good goal.
They stopped collecting them after that point because I was thinking of we had the debate, didn't we, about Trossard versus Mopai for Brighton over Christmas. And I thought Mopai's overhead kick went in, but I thought the volley was better. So maybe they stopped collating them at
everyone's
that point.
Everyone's just off, aren't they? Calvert-Lewin's penalty miss was, they're never good, are they? But his run-up was too short. Only Beppe Signore can do a run-up of one or two steps. And I know I've said this before, but I have a real agenda against the goal nets at Everton. You can't see the ball go in. You're delayed by like half a second when the ball goes in because the goal nets are not they just blend into the crowd. It's very upsetting. Leeds 3, Burnley 1. when Dan James scored, Barney, Bielsa hugged, I presume, his assistant with such tenderness that I almost choked up at that moment.
Yeah, I think we all need a hug like that, Max, don't we? We all felt that. I'm sure that's correct. I didn't actually watch this game at all, but I'm sure it was a lovely hug. Maybe ask someone else about that.
All right, I'll go to someone else. Don't worry, but Barry, I almost broke down with the tenderness of that Bielsa hug.
Again, I missed it, Max.
Did anybody, for the wind and the rain, see the most beautiful, tender hug? John Bruin, I'm left with you, John. Tell me you saw it. It's not a figment of my imagination.
I'm currently at an emotional low ebb, Max, so that could have set me off altogether. I'm glad I didn't.
I'm going to say I didn't see the hug, but...
Maybe it didn't happen.
I mean, I saw the highlights of the game. I mean, I did do some research, but I think the hug should be aimed at Sean Dyche. He needs one. You know, he's the big, strong man in the English game, you know, the ultimate alpha male. But I'm beginning to worry about him. I think it's the statistic 1 win in 20 for Burnley. I think that's correct. Oh, dear. And, of course, the guy that scored their goal, Kone, is off to the African Cup of Nations. Leeds, who I was slightly concerned about, I'm not too concerned about because they're picking up better results now and looking better fettle. Burnley, it looks like the end of the affair. And actually, when we talk about Everton, I think some Everton fans are concerned that when they turn away from Benitez, that the next choice would be the new Allardyce, and that is Sean Dyche, because I think when it comes to the end at Burnley, I think Sean Dyche will be reinvented as the new Allardyce and Pulis, who shunted from club to club to save them with his alpha maleism.
What do you think Dyche's trajectory is after this? Do you think it's sort of Middlesbrough, Nottingham Forest?
Like a sort of Chris Wilder.
West Brom. Thing, yeah. Do you think he goes there or do you think he goes...
I think he's a higher standard than that.
Right.
I think...
I don't think that's fair on him particularly. I mean, I think what he has...
No, I think he's a good manager. Yeah. He's a really good manager. There's no doubt about that. It's just more that you actually look at the way that football clubs set them out. You know, in a previous era, he might be suited to, say, Aston Villa. But Aston Villa, of course, have gone superstar with Steven Gerrard. And as the club, as the Premier League looks a bit more international, thinks a bit more image conscious, Sean Dyche perhaps isn't the fit for all of them. So you are looking at him, yeah, between that strata of bottom of the Premier League, provincial club, top of the Championship, provincial club. And I do think that he's probably a better manager than that. Doesn't he live in Corby? So somewhere that has to be a reasonable drive from Corby. So...
All the things to put on your dating profile must be a reasonable drive from Corby.
Well, he lives in that flat, doesn't he, with Ian Wone? So, you know. That...
He lives in Northampton. Like, that's where Dyche Towers is. And then he has his flat with Ian Wone. I'd like to see that sitcom, actually. But...
in sentences I didn't expect to say, Burnley were guilty of playing out from the back too much in this game, and that is an interesting... I mean, they're not hoofball, they do play better football. Every time I watch Burnley, I think, oh, they've passed it to feet there, and I've in my mind sort of created this sort of Wimbledon vibe about them, but that isn't quite fair. But that is such a big win for Leeds, Barry, and you know, do we think now it is 3 from 4, given that there is this... What is it? You've got Watford on 13, Burnley 11, Newcastle 11, Norwich unbelievably still in touch on 10, and then Leeds and Everton on 19.
Yeah, I think Leeds are good enough to stay up. They've had some heavy defeats against very good teams, but I think they'll be okay. I worry slightly about Everton. January is obviously going to be very interesting from a Newcastle perspective. Who will they get in? How much will other teams rinse them for? What calibre of professionals will they get in? And I have a feeling they'll probably stay up. I mean, they're only a win from safety, in inverted commas. So, yeah, I wouldn't rule Everton out, but I can't really have Everton have never been relegated in my lifetime, to the best of my knowledge, unless it happened when I was very young, and they will probably be okay. But they are in an awful run of form and playing dreadfully.
Right, that'll do for part two. Part three will begin at Selhurst Park. Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Crystal Palace 2, West Ham 3. Jimbo writes, I presume not that one, but if so, welcome. Can you just talk about that Lanzini finish a little? Barney, you nodded and even you exclaimed there. So good.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about that finish that I found interesting is that it is physically impossible. If you're a normal person, that was one of those moments where you realise that these professional athletes, particularly someone like Lanzini, can actually just move in a different way to you, because he adjusts his feet twice while the ball is in the air. While most of us are just sort of thinking, oh, can I get anywhere near that thing? He's actually repositioning his entire body weight to hit the ball with his left foot across the goalie. And it's what he sort of makes time stop. He kind of freezes time, creates this kind of fermata so he can get into the right position. And it's just freakish. It's like a gymnast doing a double backflip. Like, I, even though I've sort of tried to play a lot of football, that it would be physically impossible to even do that. Yeah, it was really an incredible finish, I thought. And you realise just how good someone like Lanzini is at this game.
Are you saying, Barney, that you haven't done that at the basketball court behind your mum's house?
Well, that's the difference, because yeah, you could try 100 times and you'd be able to do the Kovacic one, or 200 times. You know, in the end, you'd do it. But the Lanzini one's just impossible. That's just as someone with elite level balance and quick feet that you just can't match. And it was really something. It really was. I thought it was brilliant. And also the way he leathered it as well was quite refreshing. He just absolutely whacked it.
It had everything. He had absolutely everything. It was marvellous, wasn't it? Do we think West Ham will stay the course, John?
Probably not, but I think there's a lot to enjoy for West Ham this season. That felt to me like a classic West Ham fixture in which they played attacking, brave football, and then also looked a little bit dodgy at the back. That's just West Ham as we know it. And David Moyes, I mean, obviously this is his second spell at the club, always seemed a slightly unlikely candidate for that sort of West Ham academy. But he's got them purring and playing really nice football that I enjoy watching. And I think, considering West Ham is the club of boom and bust, two good seasons in a row, these are happy times at that club. And they've got a new investor, maybe a bit of money coming in. It feels a positive place to be around, and I'm not sure I've always felt that about West Ham.
No, Declan Rice is absolutely brilliant. I don't know anyone else agrees with this. Better than I thought he was 6 months ago. You know, I knew he was good and there was hype and understandable hype, but I don't know if he's added to his game or I'm just watching him more. But like the way he drives with the ball and carries the ball, Barney, is he's so good.
Yeah, I mean, I think this will annoy possibly Barry. I think he's the best English player. I think he's the best player England have got, and that he should be the first name on the team sheet, so to speak. I think he's absolutely brilliant. I think he's the best player in the Premier League in his position, which is the only one England have. And, you know, the sky is the limit. And he's got a great mentality as well. He's kind of funny. He's a kind of interesting person. Things don't really bother him. He's got this like kind of laugh everything off kind of air about him. It's not wild confidence. It's just a sense. I think he knows how good he is, and he's kind of a slightly sort of light-hearted kind of person. And I just think he could be as good as anything. Like, he could be the best at what he does that there is. And he's brilliant. He's got a way of running which is very seductive. I think it kind of slightly makes you think what he's done is better than it was, because he's so, we're suckers for the kind of Rolls-Royce upright style. He's so upright. But while he is upright, he's doing brilliant things with the ball, and physically at times he looks untouchable. You can't get near him. And so he gives me hope that West Ham could actually finish fourth, because they have a genuinely brilliant player there.
Were we discussing the other day that we need to move away, for the kids now, that Rolls-Royce is sort of no longer the car of choice to use. He's a Tesla.
He's a Tesla. He's a Tesla.
Right? He just purrs like a silent Tesla. He silently purrs like a Tesla who is then plugged in. You plug Declan Rice in if you can find a plug point and recharge him, and out he goes again.
I think you plug him into Mark Noble. You go over to the bench and plug him in. Mark Noble has a kind of socket. It revs him up and he comes purring back out.
That's what Mark Noble has been reduced to now, is just a charging point. And other footballers...
He's a lamppost.
Yeah, other players are like, have you got an adapter? Do you have a Masuaku adapter? And Mark Noble goes, haven't got one of those. So you're going to get roasted by Michael Olise in the second half. I couldn't power you up again for the second half. To Vicarage Road, Watford nil, Spurs won. A 1-0 win for Tottenham, John. I mean, I feel had they had their shooting boots on, they would have won this more considerably. Is that fair?
Yes, yeah. I tweeted during this game that the one thing Tottenham could really do at the moment is a top-level striker, which, because the current lad they've got just ain't cutting it, is he? A good win, really, in the end. Is it Sun set up Sanchez? They come away with the points. Barry talked about top four places. I think that Spurs could get there because of the quality of the manager. I think I said that last time I'm on. And if he can get Harry Kane scoring again, they've got a good chance. I worry about Watford. Do I worry about Watford? Aren't Watford sort of built to go down and go back up again? Yeah, that's probably what they're... There's nothing really to worry about. It's just Watford, isn't it? You know.
Yes, I think that sums up that game pretty well. Brentford 2, Villa 1. A couple of lovely goals in this game, Barry, weren't they? Danny Ings' goal was lovely and Wissa's goal for Brentford was excellent too.
Yeah, the Ings' finish was... superb, but the Buendia sort of pirouette in the build up was I didn't get the name of the defender who he left, like, just with one turn he left him 6 feet behind him, so that was a bit special, and he's struggled to have an impact since his big move during the summer to Villa. And Steven Gerrard was he got stuck into his players after the game. He wasn't happy and said, you know, it was the first time since he took over that there hadn't been putting their bodies on the line, I think it was. But I think Brentford weren't great and they won, and Villa weren't terrible and they lost, but it could have gone either way, probably.
You say they didn't put their, well, Steven Gerrard said their players didn't put their bodies on the line, but Trezeguet certainly did, didn't he? That dive is one of the best dives I think I've ever seen. I mean, it's just so tremendous. Almost could have injured himself by hurling his, sort of get whip, give himself whiplash by sort of flinging himself back. It's so extraordinary. I mean, is there a case? I mean, I found it funny. I kind of quite like that being in the game, but is there a case for somebody looking at that? Stuart Atwell having a look at that on Monday and saying, a couple of games off, mate?
I think there's a new kind of dive that we need to understand, which is the dive of a footballer who's been semi-fouled and has thought, I could go over here, but the ball's still there. And then the ball runs away from them. And in semi-annoyance and fear of missing the dive, they then throw themselves double. I think there was almost a bit of that in Bernardo Silva's thing, where he also thought, I could keep going here. And he was weighing the options in that tiny little microsecond, then was almost annoyed that he hadn't died. And you do the exaggerated follow-up just to make the point. You overdo
the FOMO
it.
Dive.
And I think we need
The FOMO dive?
Yeah, the FOMO.
The FOMIVE is what players are doing now. Anyway, we do hope he is okay. If we get any update on his condition, we will, of course, let you know. Southampton Newcastle was postponed. T says, should teams with postponed matches have to only play with players that were already registered at the time of the original scheduled fixture, i.e. not buying 11 new players to help them escape a relegation fight, for example, he said. Does T, Barry, have a point?
Well, that's clearly a dig at Newcastle, and it's funny. And I've found some of the postponements a bit odd. As I said earlier, the sort of events of the past week, Planet Football, have somewhat passed me by. But I think if the games are postponed and they, you know, buy 11 new players for £100 million each, then good for them. But
it's a good idea, though, isn't it? Because you'd also have to recall players you've sold from their new clubs and put them back in the team. And that would be interesting. And you'd also, everyone would have to recalibrate their, you'd have to feel the way you were feeling at that point. You'd have to go back to exactly where you were. All the stuff that was going on in your life, those difficult moments. Perhaps you felt bad, perhaps you felt good. And everything would have to be recalibrated perfectly. And that would be fun.
Well, that feels like enough for today. So thanks, everybody, for coming along. Thank you, John.
Cheers, Max.
Thanks, Barney.
Thanks, Max. I had a really great time.
Thank you, Barry.
You're welcome, Max.
We'll be back tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.